You're listening to a podcast of The View, brought to you by the Church of the Larger Fellowship. To find other episodes of The View and to subscribe to this podcast, visit questformeaning.org/VUU.
Hi, this is Meg Riley, and we're having another interesting conversation on The View. Today, we've brought in Elizabeth Mount and Reverend David Miller to talk about with our own Tom Shade, who are all part of the Moderators Task Force on Covenant, which Jim Key and the UUA has convened, and Susan Ritchie is chairing. Elizabeth Mount is a seminarian at Meadville Lombard Seminary and a lifelong UU, and Reverend David Miller is the senior minister at the UU Congregation of Fairfax, Virginia. So this group that Jim Key convened, as I understand it, to talk about covenant, it sounds like in the very broadest sense of the word. Tom, do you want to start by kind of telling us what the heck you guys are doing, and then others of you chime in and just share the charge and what you're talking about?
What are you talking about, Tom? Really?
People ask me that all the time. It's the second most common question they ask me. What are you talking about? And the other one is, what do you think you're doing? But this, the charge for this is quite broad. You know, and I'm trying to read Jim Key's mind, which he's basically asking us to rethink or to think again about how, at the broadest level, how we as Unitarian Universalists and Unitarian Universalist institutions, groups, and bodies, how do we think about being together, and basically challenging us to rethink away from, well, we're all members, independent members of an association, right, which we both love, resent, feel entitled with, we want stuff from them. You know, I mean, it's like, how do we think about the, you know, you just get into asking yourself, how does the average Unitarian think about the UUA? And how do we change that? And part of, by kind of lifting up covenant as a different way of being that. Now, that's the way I take it. Now, and we're still at the stage where I think in the group, we're still not quite yet all, you know, we're still wrestling with this. So I'm going to ask David and Elizabeth what they think we're doing. And let's see where we come out. David?
Well, I was just talking to Tom earlier. He wrote an essay in the new book, Turning Point, edited by Fred Muir, that's based on his Berry Street lecture. And it talks about sort of the I Church and the We Church. And I think we have a long history of creating boundaries of our own making. And not seeing ourselves as an organic whole. And so part of the struggle that we have is, you know, we're all so individualistic in our needs in our congregations, as an association of congregations with the UUA. And I think the turning point that Fred's book is talking about, and I think in the turning point that Jim is trying to figure out and get us to think about, is how do we look at ourselves as an organic whole versus all these separate entities who expect things from each other versus work together in ways that serve the mission versus the expectations of each other's need? How do we covenant together to serve the mission? And then that asks a question, what is the mission that we're serving?
That's what I was going to ask you. What is the mission?
Well, that's part of what we've been discussing is the UUA, if you look at the bylaws, and I don't have it right in front of me, don't necessarily talk about mission. They talk about service. And for those of us who have been involved in, you know, organizations for a long time, we often talk about mission and vision. And so to not have a collective mission that we're all sort of bought into or agreed upon is what I think helps create this individualism. So we don't have that same shared idea that we're all striving for. We often talk about this as a movement. I sometimes struggle with that because a movement implies that we're all moving in the same direction, and I don't always feel like we are. Elizabeth?
I think you pretty well covered it. I guess the only thing I would add is that it's been feeling like, yeah, we've got this expectation that we're giving money to receive services in a very corporatized model of the UUA, and we're not looking to do that. We're looking to create relationships throughout all of our churches and communities, and it's that missional piece, and it's binding us together rather than exchanging goods for services.
That is a very large charge you all have been given. So how did you start? Where did you start this conversation?
Well, one of the things that had happened was that Susan Ritchie had a long conversation with somebody among the American Baptists, mm-hmm. who actually organized their General Assembly around, I mean, this is a process still pretty mysterious to me, is that they basically create a thing called their whole assembly or annual meeting is based on people talking about how they fit into their mission, which to them is quite explicit. It is the, you know, the Great Commission that you know, to go forth and spread Jesus' name among the nations. But they gather in subgroups, and then they have to talk about how people relate to that mission, and then they have it works up to this large mission table where basically all the stakeholders in their thing are like hammering out how do we all fit into this mission. So it's a very mission-driven kind of discussion, decision-making process, instead of quite this kind of legislative system that we have, where everybody comes in, represents, motions are laid on the table, people raise their cards, yay or nay, and so on. But it is, you know, I mean, that's where we started. But what seems to come from it is it's really trying to rethink the culture, the cultural norms that we have, you know, which is just, you know, when you start thinking about how do we actually relate to each other, and it really gets kind of, you know, it gets kind of squirrely. I mean, it's like so many people seem to hate this organization that they're all in. I mean, it's like, you know, there's like suspicion and resentment are very common among us. Elizabeth, David, what do you think?
Elizabeth, do you want to go, or I'm happy to go? You know, I go ahead.
No, go for it.
Okay, so yes, I mean, I think that we have this anti-authoritarian bent in us. And part of that comes from, I mean, that's part of what is talked about in this book is, you know, the long history of anti-authoritarianism. Tom, I love the thing about the Baptist model that we've talked about is it really starts at the grassroots level and funnels upwards, which is very much what we would like to be. But it takes the culture and it shifts it. It shifts it away from sort of the governance model to the mission model, and the effort, well, the reason that we're trying to do this, I think, and the thing that we've talked about is how do we take the culture and shift it away from putting the reliance so heavily on the discussion of the vote versus the discussion of our purpose. Where we're headed, what we're trying to achieve, how do we do the work in the world that we can do the best way possible, and then how do we drive that process in a way that brings people into it versus have people want to be outside and critique it.
Right, and I think the other piece of that is if we're networking and evolving our missions, we can go in a few different directions without somebody having to lose out. Right now in the government governance structure that we have, each piece has to win or lose on any given piece of business. And this allows us to grow in multiple directions without feeling like we have to cut off anything that's not that one main thrust that we've decided on for the next year.
And one of the things we've talked about, and it's in the report, it says we can imagine this covenant would include each entity's statement of how they're living, their understanding of their UU mission, and how they pledge to both support the larger movement's missional commitments, both by affirming the mission, but also participating as possible in as many opportunities for mutual clarifying and expanding the understanding of the mission, which means that occasionally there'll be opportunities, more than occasionally, to covenant with different groups within the UUA, with clusters, with regions, with affiliate kind of organizations, you know, and it puts the emphasis then on the covenant and the work to be done versus the governance.
Okay, Hank, Joanna, you're listening to all this. Does this sound like coming from the same planet you live on?
Well, I guess, you know, for me, when I listened to this, when I first read Tom, what you've written about this group, you know, I first thought, oh, it's a way of bringing in folks who aren't necessarily in congregations or who do a lot of work in our larger UU world, but aren't necessarily members of a particular congregation, and how do we include them in? I love the idea of us being really focused on the mission, and I guess my question is how do we make sure that the mission is more than just us doing social justice? You know, I think my concern is always, that the mission is tied to our theology. So it's not just that we're just another group of folks out wanting to do good stuff in the world, but that it comes from a particular theological background. And I guess so. That's my question: is how is the mission informed by our theology?
Well, and I want to tag on to that because you know you were saying the Baptist mission is to spread the good news of Jesus, but our mission, as we express it, seems to be to spread the good news about ourselves a lot of the time, which I think is a huge problem because we are, like everyone else on the planet, supremely broken people. So it seems to me like we just keep coming back to pointing to what we call the beloved community, but really it's us. And I wonder if that will ever work as, to me, mission is something that pulls me beyond myself, not back into myself. I'm just curious. I'm sure you all talked about stuff like this at length. So,
not so much, but it is an important. We haven't talked about this, but I have an opinion. Surprise!
You shocker!
But one of the things that I think, our congregations are first and foremost worshiping communities, right? They're not chapters of a social justice organization. They're worshiping communities. And we don't think of it, we set up this dichotomy between worship and mission, right? But in reality, one of our most important missions, in fact, the mission that most of our congregations spend more money and time and staff time on, is that we provide worship opportunities for the communities that we live in, right? We provide Fairfax, Virginia with an opportunity to worship in a particular kind of way, in a particular atmosphere of freedom, in a particular atmosphere that's open to all kinds of influences, a broader range of influences than most churches. It's important work and it's service to a larger community, or it should be. Sometimes it's hard for us to remember that. But it is a mission of ours to provide this kind of worship opportunity for our communities. Now, if we start looking at that as being one of our missions, and social justice as being another one of our missions, then we're talking about how do we bring together disparate parts of our mission, not mission versus this other thing, which then, for most of the you know, religious professionals, they go, well, wait a second, you're talking about, you start talking about mission, it's feeding the poor and, you know, protesting this and that thing. And, you know, frankly, I got a lot to do this week because I'm not sure my music director's on the same page I am about next Sunday service, you know? I mean, which is where our lives, you know, us, ones that are in the work, the parish work, that's where our lives really are, right? So it seems like the UUA then all of a sudden is this foreign body pulling us away from our work and not not providing a way that we, I mean, if we looked at ourselves as in a covenant, as ministers with each other to provide worship where we are, then we're not, we're all doing the same work and we have a lot more in common, all the ones who are doing that parish work.
So do you think we need, do you think we need a new way of being pious?
That's a good question, Hank. That's a good question.
Well, it sounds irreverent, but it's actually a really important question.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, I always say that my personal mission in ministry is to help facilitate healing, wholeness, and transformation for ourselves, each other, and the planet. And what so I feel like I try to have a personal mission statement. Our congregations have tried to work on vision and mission statements. The UUA as an association struggles with what our mission is collectively. So I agree with, I know, I agree with Tom. I agree with Tom. It doesn't always happen, but I do agree with Tom. That there are a broad base of elements of what our mission is, but we frequently focus on one piece of that because the conversation isn't broad enough. That's my personal opinion, is that because we, you know, we want to sell Unitarian Universalism or we want to do social justice, but the mission of the religious purpose of our congregations is to facilitate, in my words, healing, wholeness, and transformation for ourselves, each other, and the planet. So what does that mean in a broader sense, and how do we get everybody on board to think that way versus, oh, the UUA, that's not their mission. Their mission is to provide services to me. Their mission isn't to provide services to me. Their mission is to help me and help us all and work together to fulfill this broader mission.
Is this an issue of, you know, three blind men and the elephant? Is it that everyone is trying to talk about the same thing, but they're all touching a different part of it? That was a real question, not a rhetorical one.
I was just having the image of the elephant and the three blind men.
Yeah, I think so. I think so, in the sense that what I would like to see happen is that for everybody to bring their personal, their congregational mission statement and put it on the table. And not in the effort to go, well, let's boil them all down to something really bland that everybody agrees with. Right, you know, I don't think we need another mission wordsmithing.
You're not going for the seven principles all over again.
Right, you know, except this time it'd be 99. But anyway, but just be able to say, okay, this little piece of your mission and this little piece of that person's mission and my mission all coincide. And I'm willing to make a covenant with you to do that piece. That's part of a whole fabric of covenants that I'm making. I'm in dozens of covenants. I have covenant with you people all to show up here on Thursday morning, right? And that we'll do this way. And I'm in covenant with the people on that committee to show up and to do the work in this in a particular way. And I'm in covenant with the people in my congregation, and I'm in covenant with other ministers through the UUMA. And I mean, there's, if you start looking at it, each of us are in hundreds of covenants, right? So how do we start to like make that fabric richer and to deepen each one of those covenants? And that make, to understand the UUA this religious movement as all of these people covenanted in all these different ways and also covenanted with people outside of it. Because I'm in all these other covenants too.
We have a question from Tandy Rogers, who is
also
a great covenant and has been working hard on this and would also be a great guest here today to talk about this. But she asked, what if our mission was to send disciples of Unitarian Universalists to co-sponsor with Most Awesome Goodness and amplify love in the world? What if we moved from being individual consumers of religion to commission networks of liberators? What do you think of that?
I'm for it. So I know this is one of the discussions we've had, and I kind of made a flippant statement about the seven principles. But we have this tendency to think of the seven principles as something nice that we say when we don't want to say, well, we're like Protestants, but without all that Jesus. But in fact, if our mission was to send disciples to co-conspire with Most Awesome Goodness and amplify love in the world, that is the affirming and promoting of those seven principles. And for Raise UUs especially, one of the reasons that you have so many people who identify as UU, even though they don't come to church, is they think they made that commitment to Unitarian Universalism itself, not to an individual church. And so they are out there co-conspiring and amplifying love. What this change in missional focus could do is to give them a way back to be in relationship with us as people again.
And I think we're at this, you know, I don't mean to push Fred's book, but I think we are at this turning point. You know, I mean, I also don't want to get too heavily into the politics, but we're seeing the political landscape of the value systems that we find most challenging in the world rise to the surface. And what is that calling us to do? So now more than ever, I think we're being called to put forth our values in the world in such a way that our covenant is apparent and understood and strong and outwardly focused and missional in such a way that we're clear about how we're bringing the values to the world. I mean, I know some people don't like these things, but I am an evangelical Unitarian Universalist, which means I think we do have a message, and it's not about, I don't think it's about come to our congregation and be Unitarian Universalists. It's about how do the values that we support create a more loving, kind, and compassionate world. So how are we doing that together versus in all these different places all over the country in different ways, not coordinated well by a central group?
See, I would say for me, creating a Standing on the Side of Love campaign was my attempt to put our mission out. And Unitarian Universalists could not bear to not put our logo on that. I mean, so the way that that's evolved is Unitarian Universalists stand on the side of love. So again, it points back to our congregations. I understand that we want people to know who we are and we want to be visible. But I feel like, to me, the idea of putting out a value, our theology, which is what I think that is, and then inviting people to be part of that value wherever they are in another congregation or nowhere, boy, that was not a popular idea because it didn't point to us. And so that's a tension I'm always living with. I want people to know who we are so they can get nurtured and nourished. And I feel like when we're constantly pointing to ourselves as the way, the truth, and the light, we're not going to get very far. Aisha, I'm sorry I interrupted you.
No, that's okay. I just want to jump in because, one of the things that has been a struggle for me is how we continue to be white-centered. I mean, all this angst about decentering ourselves is because Unitarian Universalism replicates the dominant culture, which is a white culture. So part of this conversation, I hope, is because communities of color, I'm very involved with drum, religious professionals of color, and one of the stark differences when I'm together with folks of color is we talk less about uncentering ourselves because we know we're working together for the community because we're a minority within Unitarian Universalism in a big way. And so I liked your statement about transformation, transform the world, and because how we do anything is how we do everything. And right now we are so hierarchical, we're patriarchal, we talk so much about governance, and I'm glad that was lifted up. We need to move away from the mechanics and governance and who's in charge and why, and what does it mean to work together. The difficulty that I feel we have is how to work in community. Because the community at its best is you give up a little of what you want, I put that in quotes, for the good of the community, but the community's needs are met all the time. And so it's a difficult discussion, and it feels like this, the angst of how do we uncenter ourselves is because, you know, that's a dominant culture. The dominant culture can do what it wants all the time. I mean, white people have been in the center of everything. So I hope part of the discussion is, to me, I don't think you can separate that why are we so, I mean, Carlton Elliott Smith always talks about when did Unitarian faith begin, when there were still slaves and white men ruled the world, and so how different are we? So I'm going to be quiet now.
Well, I guess for me, you know, when I hear all this, and, you know, in speaking to some of the folks who are who have been or who are candidates for the UUA presidency, one of the things I said to them is that folks have heard in congregations have heard a lot about, you know, what congregations do for the UUA, but haven't heard that much about what the UUA does for folks in the congregations. And I think that's there's something there too, which I think is also part of the decentralization too. You know, trying not to make it more about like pointing back to us, but about like really the services that the that 24 Farnsworth provides for the congregations, and I think that's really there's something there as well that I think the next group of the next generation of folks coming into leadership aren't really going to be focused on like let's necessarily fly this one big flag and support this one big thing, but like how is that going to support us in our congregations, in our communities, and working it that way.
We also need the theology of humility. I need to jump in with that because I feel like we are not enough of a humble people. We're, you know, it's great to think we're so wonderful and awesome, yay, but we're not humble. We need to throw in humility somewhere.
Right. Well, I think our absence of confession as a spiritual practice is a giant thing that is part of our culture and it permeates all the way out. And I'm struck by the way we're having a conversation about culture, which makes me feel like, wow, you have a huge purview here. But, you know, Tom, you said something brilliant the other day. I read something of yours brilliant the other day that I just see echoing back and forth in all the places where I'm a UU, particularly in my seminary. And that is that you observe that as a people, we are process anxious and leadership adverse. So for Elizabeth and David, like how do you see this playing out in what you're trying to do?
Oh dear.
For folks who folks are listening on podcast, David just pointed his finger at me approvingly.
No, I was pointing at Elizabeth to try and speak first.
Okay. I thought he was pointing at me. Everyone felt pointing at.
So I think there is the possibility of good and difficult with this. So in terms of leadership averse, if we make you all get together and actually figure out what common points of mission are, there are no outside leaders to say we're providing services for X, Y, and Z, and now you can be reactive against us, because it makes it more grassroots. It's more bottom up. At the same time, if we do this in a mission table fashion, we're going to force people to not sit in their seats and up-down vote and wave cards and count numbers. We're going to force people to really have deep conversations with each other. And I don't know how that's going to go, but I hold high hopes for growth and discernment.
And I struggle so much with the us and them language, because we are one. We are one organism. And if we're shifting the culture, if we're changing the conversation, it doesn't mean that there isn't important opportunities for evaluation. It doesn't mean that there aren't things that people need to be held accountable for. It means, what are we holding people accountable for? Are they not providing us services? Are we not working with the congregation down the street? Those are us and them kind of things. Are we not doing this together that we've been called to do is a very different conversation. And how are we fulfilling that, and how are we not fulfilling that, is different than pointing to 24 and saying they're not providing us the services that we are contracted to receive, versus they're not in covenant with us on trying to achieve these things. How do we come back into covenant and evaluate how that works? Those are very different conversations.
I like the way you frame that, David.
I mean, you know, I can see how this whole effort could get subverted by our process suspicion and leadership aversion. I can imagine the people, because I used to be one of those people who would look at this and go, oh, this is their new plan. We're all going to get together and agree on a mission. Okay. This is like, you know, the people in your congregation will go, oh my God, you're writing another mission statement. Does that mean I have to go to some boring workshop all day in the church? And, you know, and the whole thing is all going to come down to that we all need to pay more money to 24 Farnsworth. You know, I mean, you can just build the suspicious, averse, leadership averse, culturally resistant line of argument about this, that this is just changing the names of things, and in the end, it's still going to be the same old insiders running everything, and they're going to want our money, and they're not going to want to do anything. They're going to want our money so they can go to conferences where they talk about mission and values and all this stuff. And, you know, as somebody once said, it's like the UUA rains, but the water never hits the ground. You know, right? And, you know, yeah, that could happen. You know, so that's the question, is how do we, if from inside this culture, change this culture? You know, and how do we make this work? You know, Joanna, you're a person who's been like totally involved in this huge effort to change the way we, you know, we think about, you know, internal politics in the UUA, and yet at the same time, it seems like that culture can reassert itself at any time in it, you know?
Yeah. I have to tell you, I went to the Parliament of World Religions last fall, mm-hmm. and some of my UU minister friends were there too, and everyone that I talked to, like, one of the big joys but also frustrations was, and I realized that I'm not talking apples to apples. Okay, so the Parliament of World Religions, for those who don't know, was where you had people from all these different world religions all gather together in Salt Lake City and share information and experiences. And the joyful part was, it was, I think, one of the most grace-filled things that I've ever been to. Everyone just came there with such a spirit of generosity. I mean, the Sikhs in a very tangible way, because they were feeding, you know, thousands of us every day. But there was just so much grace and hospitality and generosity. I mean, the Sikhs also did this thing where anyone could come by and they would explain the turban and put a turban on you and then send you on your way. So, you know, Salt Lake City was suddenly filled with all of these, you know, white people walking around in Sikh turbans. And talking to my UU friends, we said, wow, wouldn't it be amazing if this kind of spirit, if we felt this every time we left General Assembly? And I realize it's not, you know, that it's apples and oranges. You're always better behaved, you know, in someone else's house than in your own. But that's, you know, when you talk about covenant, I mean, this is the promises that we make to each other. And is it possible to get there, to have, as Aisha lifted up, humility, you know, in what we do, humility and generosity. And I don't know, that I may be taking this off into a different direction, but that's one of the things I've really been struggling with, because missionalism is about going out into the world and being generous and spreading grace. And how do we do that if we can't do it in our own home?
Also, I think, amen, Joanna, to everything you said. And David, a lot of what you've said has resonated with me, because I'm actually going to push back on the idea of how leadership averse we are. I really am, because I'm now, I think what we're averse to is inauthentic leadership. And David, you had said something earlier about the boundaries we create for ourselves. And so this whole how we do leadership, I think, is what we're averse to. We create such boundaries as that they become walls, and we become inauthentic because we're afraid to be ourselves. What I heard in your story, Joanna, is how authentic the Sikhs came. They fed people because that is who they are. I mean, I'm an Arab. I'm Egyptian. I can't not be hospitable when you come to my home and I cook for 30 when there's only two of you. That's just who I am. And so if part of authenticity is humility and coming and bringing our best selves. Now, it also, it doesn't mean you can't be, you know, have reasonable boundaries, of course. However, I think what I think we're suffering from is a lack of authentic leadership, because I have found not, you know, that what I'm learning so much from being the religious professional who's not an ordained minister of a congregation of 500 people. People actually want leadership, they want authentic leadership, and they want to be included. And so that's been my limited experience as this role, but I've been a religious educator now for 12 years. So that's what I see. I don't think, I have not experienced, and I would say it's not a blanket, we just hate leadership. I think people can smell hypocrisy from a mile away. They know when people are being phony. So I think our issue is inauthentic leadership, and unfortunately, we have too much of that.
Whoa.
Can I ask you a question, Aisha?
Do you
think, it's a question that I'm actually, because I was the one who brought that phrase in here. I agree with you in the sense that as when I was the parish minister of a church, I did not feel, for the most part, I mean, there was always some cranks, but for the most part, that people in the pews resented my leadership. I think, though, that we, and when I think about where I see that, I think that it's among our leadership circles that there's this sense of competition and kind of like distrust of each other as leaders, right? You know, and I don't know, maybe other people who have more experience with different leadership circles can speak to that, but you point out something that I hadn't thought about, which is that in my congregation, you know, the people in the pews generally want more, better, and you know, stronger leadership in the organization. They want it to work. They want it to work better than it is. You know, that they're very positive in a lot of ways. We got a question from. Oh, go ahead.
Aisha, you talked about, you know, putting our best foot forward, and so a question that I have is: does the fact that we are, for the most part, very privileged, has that lowered the stakes on it? Does that mean, yeah, we don't, we, it's okay for us to be arrogant, you know, about those foolish people with superstitious beliefs, or to be anti-authoritarian, because we can be. And another question that kind of goes along with this that I've really been thinking about is, and I think this kind of goes to the missional focus of sending people out to be missionaries for our values in the world. When we wear a chalice necklace, we're a brand ambassador. And what are we representing? I mean, we all know the story about how the flaming chalice came to be, you know, that during the Holocaust, this was a symbol that no matter what your language was, it meant something. It symbolized something to people. When we put on that chalice necklace and walk out into the world, what is it that we are representing to people who have no idea what a UU is?
Are you asking me?
Or anyone.
Oh.
I mean, I think to me this is, you know, if we're going to be missional, don't we have to have a common understanding that, number one, that's what we're doing, that we're not just wearing that chalice necklace because it makes us feel good, but that we are representing something.
Yeah, we define by our behavior what that chalice means.
Right. Know. No, so every Friday I wear, yeah.
They go.
Yeah, every Friday I wear a clerical collar, and I'm very aware that, you know, this is not a time to be flipping off the driver in front of me because I'm wearing a clerical collar. So what if we all felt that urgency whenever we wore that chalice necklace or that standing on the side of love shirt or that chalice pin of, oh, I really, like, what am I doing from the little things to the big things, because I am representing something huge here.
Years ago, I was wearing this shirt.
I have a chalice tattoo. I'm never going to get away from it.
Years ago, I was wearing this shirt that said, affirming the inherent worth and dignity of every person. It was an old LBGT UU shirt. And I was like totally in a rush to get on an airplane. I thought I was going to miss it. I was late. So I got to the door and I'm looking down and the guy says to me, respecting the inherent worth and dignity of every person, you haven't even looked at me. And I went, oh, thank you so much. God, you're right, you know. But it was, I always joke that it was the only time somebody, like, called me to account for being a Unitarian Universalist. But I was witnessing and not very well to our faith by wearing that shirt around. And, yeah, it was startling and wonderful when he said that. That was 20 years ago. I still remember it.
I remember standing on a corner in Phoenix, Arizona. Such a fine sight to see. But I was standing on a corner in Phoenix when the arrests were being made, and I was wearing my clerical collar because my job as assigned was to step in between police and protesters if there was going to be a fight. But I was watching as the other group was being arrested. And there was a young African-American woman and her child standing next to me, and the child looked up at her mom, and I wrote this, and it was in the UU World when it happened, and she said, Mom, what are they doing? And the mom said, do you remember what I told you Dr. King did? This is what they're doing. They're the love people. And that's been an impression on me ever since that moment that we are inherently, as we present ourselves, as we wear our chalice, as we wear our standing outside of love shirts, how we're perceived in public, how we represent ourselves, is truly us serving the mission of this confused, this interrelated, this covenantal, non-covenantal mission that we try to live. And so the thing that I think we're trying to do as a task force is, how do we make that clearer and more and shared more on behalf of more of us, so those kinds of things are happening every day in our congregation, whether it's worship or justice work or service or witness, that it weaves its thread through everything that we do in a clearer and more agreed upon way.
the big task y'all have taken on. We had a question from Laurie Stone Czertowski of how do we marry the reality of our congregations as being primarily worshiping communities, which is pretty internally focused, with our mission to be outwardly focused. So we just have a few more minutes, but maybe you'll all answer that as you make a few concluding remarks.
We might not be able to finish it, but we can start that conversation. So I don't know that worship needs to be other than mission-driven. If part of your mission is to grow souls in love, then your worship should be an act in service of your mission. So worship doesn't happen for its own sake. Worship is an action which serves a greater mission of a congregation.
Yeah, that's what I would say that too, is that worship is part of our mission. It's one of the ways that we communicate to the world. And one of the offerings that we offer people. Just, I mean, you know, if your life consists of every chance you have to think about anything deeper consists of watching people on television yell at each other, knowing that there's a place where serious issues and serious life is talked about and ultimate values and ultimate realities are offered, and you have a chance to, if nothing else, sing along with the great song, then you've offered something to the community. It's when our worship, I mean, we always face the temptation that our worship is about just celebrating our own little closed circle. But that's the side that we should not accept as what's going on. Worship has to be something we offer to the world. And it may be useful to a person who comes only one time, but that's good enough, you know.
I'd like to, before we close, add these words from Tandy Rogers in our comments. She writes, "I crave a ritual of putting on the chalice, words we say to symbolize the promise we make to our faith tradition, God and the world. May we be flaming chalices, igniting love everywhere we go."
Amen to that. Thanks so much to today's guests for being here. It's a really provocative conversation that could go on and will for you go on for a while, and it'll be exciting to see what comes out of the group. Next week we have Reverend Cheryl Walker, who's the president of the Unitarian Universalist Ministers Association, aka UUMA, to talk about what is new with them, which is always interesting. So That'll be fun. Thanks everybody for coming, and see you next time.
This has been a podcast of The View, brought to you by the Church of the Larger Fellowship. To find out more about the CLF, visit questformeaning.org.